The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Wright, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Rach, a very good morning to you and all the best for 2019.
Boker tov, chodesh tov, happy new year to you, Howard. I hope you had a good vacation and a good break. And welcome back. Is this now officially back to work kind of day in your part of the world?
Yeah, if you can define this as work, I don't know. It doesn't feel like work.
Well, I don't know. I guess compared to your holiday, maybe this is just a holiday from your holiday.
Right, exactly. No, this is when my family goes on holiday because they've got no one to annoy them. So early in the morning, I've got something to do, you know. So
okay, keep you out of mischief for
a while. Exactly. When we had days that my wife was trying to make arrangements for me to go and play with somebody because
did you find any play dates now?
Yeah, plenty. It was great. Anyway. Anthony, let's get on to some of the serious conversations. Prime Minister Netanyahu used the opportunity of meeting with U.S. Security Advisor John Bolton to call on the U.S. to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Give us a little bit more information here.
Well, you know, the Golan Heights is in an interesting situation because, you know, for those whose memories go back to 1967 when the Golan Heights became part of Israel, this is an area that has still not been recognized by the U.S. government as having Israeli sovereignty over it. And there have been various presidents in the past who have addressed this issue, including Gerald Ford in 1975, who wrote an important letter to then Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. And in 1991, U.S. Secretary of State James Baker also addressed this issue with Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir about the status of the Golan Heights. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the United States still considers the Golan Heights to be Syrian territory held under Israeli occupation, which is obviously subject to negotiation and Israeli withdrawal. And the fact that Israeli law was applied officially to the Golan Heights by the Knesset, a law that was passed back in 1981, the United States does not actually recognize this fact and the fact that Israeli law applies over the Golan Heights. So it is an interesting disputed piece of land. And of course, now that Prime Minister Netanyahu has the ear of the American president and U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton is in Israel. He arrived yesterday and he is meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and other officials, Israeli officials, on the issue of U.S. withdrawal from Syria. And all the focus is, of course, on the northern border, and all the focus is on Israeli security in that particular area. So this seems to be an opportune moment for Prime Minister Netanyahu to raise the issue of the Golan Heights with the U.S. administration. And he did so yesterday in a press conference when he said that the Golan Heights is tremendously important for Israeli security and that Israel will never withdraw from the Golan Heights, that the Golan Heights is effectively an indelible part of the State of Israel and the land of Israel, and that the Prime Minister is intending today to try to demonstrate this a little bit better to John Bolton. Apparently the Prime Minister and Bolton will be taking a helicopter trip over Israel's northern border over to the Golan Heights to see things from a bird's eye view. And the Prime Minister apparently is hoping to be able to reinforce, at least in John Bolton's mind, the importance of the Golan Heights to Israel. Hopefully, weather permitting, they will take that helicopter ride. It has been cold. It has been windy. It has been very, very wet. Weather has been stormy. There is apparently snow over the Hermon at the moment and up in the Golan area. So we hope that the weather will allow them to take that helicopter ride. But I think it is an interesting conversation to have about the Golan Heights. And I guess it's an interesting timing from the Prime Minister in terms of raising this with the U.S. administration in order to try to get Israeli sovereignty recognized over the Golan area.
Do you think there's a chance that they'll succeed in this?
You can't rule anything out, can you, right? Because, I mean, we've been so surprised by some of the actions that President Trump has taken. And I just wondered to myself whether the Prime Minister might not be trying somehow to maneuver kind of some sort of a deal with the President, which says, well, you're withdrawing your troops from Syria, you're going to leave us exposed. We're particularly exposed on the northern border. We've got this issue with the Golan Heights. We need the Golan in order to protect ourselves. You can just see that rhetoric, that kind of storyboard being put together, where the Prime Minister says to the President, so in exchange for you withdrawing your troops, which is what you need to do politically for whatever reason, what you think is the right thing for you to do, give me something in return. Perhaps the President will take this on board. Who knows?
Very, very interesting, and it'll signify a tremendous shift if they do. So I think it will be a tremendous
shift. I mean, having said that, you know, even though the Golan is a disputed territory, in the classic sense of the word, there obviously hasn't been the same focus on the Golan as there has been, for example, on the areas of Judea and Samaria and the areas of East Jerusalem, which have always come up for discussion with the Palestinian Authority. The Golan is obviously disputed with Syria, as opposed to the Palestinian Authority, which really is disputed with Jordan, if you really want to take it to its natural place from 1967. But the whole Syrian angle has kind of been left, I say, in the background a little bit, on the back burner, because obviously the Syrian government has been busy with other things. In the meantime, has not been able to raise this issue of this disputed territory along the Golan. There was a time about a few years ago when there was apparently movement towards trying to establish a formal peace agreement with Syria, and there was a lot of talk about the Golan potentially being divided up or given back or whatever, and there was this whole campaign that was raised in Israel, Ha'am im HaGolan. That was the strap line that was used, the people are with the Golan, in order to try to encourage the government not to consider giving up any of the Golan Heights, as was being considered at that time. But since then, since the whole peace thing fell through, it hasn't really come up for discussion since then.
Yeah, well, and I guess that no one in their right mind would suggest that at the moment that Syria, that the Golan would be in safe hands in Syria, with the Syrian government.
I mean, obviously the Golan is highly strategically important to Israel because of its height, and because of the ability to see a fair distance from the Golan, not only from our perspective, but you can think about the opposite situation. If the Syrian forces had the right to gain access to the Golan, what damage they could do to Israel from that height. So therefore the whole Golan is very, very controversial. And with it, of course, access to the Sea of Galilee, which was also part of that whole discussion with Egypt, with Syria at the time, about getting access to the eastern shores of the Sea of Galilee, and more importantly, to the water in the Kinneret, in the Sea of Galilee. And so, you know, there was a lot of consternation about the fact that Syria might be given access to water rights on the Kinneret, and that would really do damage to Israeli water resources. That never transpired either. But you could almost see that discussion returning at some point in the future.
All right, and certainly keep an eye on that one. The Palestinian Authority has withdrawn officials from the Rafah crossing and has closed that crossing. Why has this been done, Anthony?
So this is once again internal politics between Fatah and Hamas. And what we understand is that there has been some activity within the Gaza over the past few days, where apparently something like 500 Fatah activists in the Gaza Strip have been taken into custody by Hamas. Now, it's not exactly clear why they decided to detain these individuals. Apparently, Fatah was preparing to hold some sort of a rally in Gaza to mark an anniversary of launching some of its first armed attacks against Israel. Would you believe that? This is Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, holding a rally in Gaza in order to mark some anniversary of launching attacks towards Israel. Be that as it may, Hamas felt that, it seems like Hamas felt that this was something of a threat to them, and these individuals have been arrested. And as a result of that, the Palestinian Authority said, fine, we are going to withdraw our officials from the Rafah border crossing, which is the border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. And the moment those employees of the Palestinian Authority have been pulled out of the Rafah crossing, the crossing is effectively closed. Now, you know, this has serious implications because obviously this is a very, very important economic stream, economic lifeline for the Gaza Strip. And it's not clear whether the Egyptian government has actually been part of this decision to close the Rafah crossing. We know that the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas was in Cairo a few days ago to meet with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah Sisi, and it's not clear whether or not this issue was discussed. But be that as it may, this is really internal Hamas-Fatah politics really coming to the fore, and whereas Israel is being blamed in the most part for creating economic conditions in Gaza that are really, not what we would like to see, there are unfortunately no reports about the fact that in fact, the Palestinian Authority has the right and the ability to control the economic lifeline in Gaza, and this is what they do with it. They use, politics, internal politics between the two factions in order to, show their strength at the crossing. And so this is what's happened. I wonder to myself whether Israel might not have in its interests somehow to convince Fatah to reopen the Palestinian Authority, to reopen that crossing, because potentially things could bubble up in Gaza,
of course,
and that could be vented against Israel. So
no
that's
question.
Obviously not what we would like. And I just wonder whether Israel might not intervene on this matter.
Absolutely. Well, again, will be interesting to see. The next story is one that is absolutely fascinating. The Knesset has passed a law that the world's ugliest color has got to be used on cigarette packaging.
So this is apparently not an unusual thing, and I was sort of hoping that Dina might be around. And
no,
maybe
she's
we
only back next
Dina.
Week, unfortunately.
We might have a discussion with Dina about this, because
yes.
This is, for me, a fascinating story. So this apparently is an ugly color, which is a muddy, greenish-brown color, according to the way that it's described. And it's even got its own Pantone number, 448C. Pantone 448C is the color that has been voted the world's ugliest color, albeit back in 2016. But I can't imagine that people have changed their minds about this.
No, I'm sure not.
And, and this is a color apparently that has been adopted on cigarette packaging, not only in Israel, but apparently in the UK, in France, in Australia. And the idea is that it will discourage people from buying cigarettes because of the ugly packaging. Okay, now this is a fascinating kind of marketing psychology.
Jeez.
Which is being used. And I was thinking to myself, would I not drink my favorite whiskey because it was packaged in an ugly bottle? I'm sort of trying to think, or my favorite chocolate cake.
So I was thinking, when you were talking about that as well, I was thinking about it. And the answer might be that if you like the product, that you'll continue buying it, but you might not try it in the first place if the packaging doesn't appeal to you.
So maybe that's the idea, that this is all about trying to discourage first-time smokers from taking up smoking, as opposed to trying to discourage those people who are dyed-in-the-wool smokers and are unlikely to give up. The packaging apparently, I suspect, probably won't influence them. But it is an interesting philosophy that, now the Knesset has passed in Israel, and apparently in a year's time from now, it will be a legal requirement for cigarette packaging to be in what we will be the color, what is called in Israel, khumkhaki, okay, like a brown sort of khaki color, brownish, whatever, greenish color. And apparently this will also apply to all kinds of other smoking paraphernalia, except for particular e-cigarettes, which have their own sort of discussion and controversy around them. So it's not exactly clear what the status of the whole e-cigarette thing is. But this is, for me, was a fascinating marketing idea. And I just wonder what you guys think about it. Do you think that this... Do you think that people would be discouraged from starting to smoke if the packaging was this ugly color?
Well, Baruch has just sent a picture of the color. So I am looking at it. Zanati, what do you think of this color that's being forced on cigarettes boxes in Israel to discourage people
It would certainly discourage me.
It is revolting. it actually is a revolting color. And I think it might.
It is.
You don't want to touch something that's that color.
No.
It does look quite, unpalatable. Apparently it's been called unappealing. But in addition to this color that's been adopted on cigarette packaging, the size of the warning, the required warning text, is actually going to be doubled. Okay, not that you can't see it already. It's in huge text on every single package. Apparently the size of the text is going to be doubled. So this is going to be an interesting thing to see. And perhaps it is a discussion that we could raise with Dina next week to see what she thinks about it. But it's a very, very interesting marketing tool. And I just wonder whether it'll make any difference to the number of people who smoke. I mean, having said that, it is noticeable that smoking has become very much less acceptable in Israeli society, with, you know, no smoking being allowed indoors and not in public places and not in restaurants and not in shops. And, you know, everybody who smokes has to be smoking outside and things like that. So, you know, I remember the days when people used to smoke on airplanes and everywhere. And these days it's very, very much less accepted. So I think that there can be no doubt that there are less people smoking today than used to in the past. Let's see how this changes all of that and you know, discourages people further from smoking.
Absolutely. Anthony, it is 8:01. That's where we leave it. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow morning. Have a fantastic day.